In order, we have a quorum present, that being Senators Ellis, Terrio, and Chair Taylor. The first item on the agenda today is SB 97. This is Senator Ward's bill. I think he's next door, but are you going to present for him? You give us your full name, please, and spell your last name.
My name is Loretta Brown. Last name spelled B-R-O-W-N. And I am on staff with Senator Ward. SB 97 has to do with probation and parole fees. It's been presented before. There is a, I think you have a sponsor statement, but I'm not going to bother reading that. I'd like to just kind of give you some of our research that we've been doing on this from other states, other successful programs that have used probation and parole fees to help offset supervision fees for the probation departments. There's a common perception of criminals as penniless and unemployable. Most offenders on probation can afford modest supervision fees. That's what's been determined. Most people that are put on probation or parole, part of their agreement for probation and parole is to get a job, to be employed, and part of the probation officer's job is to help them do that. By 1992, almost half the states allowed probation departments to charge fees for probation supervision, ranging from $10 to $40 and a month. A lot of that is going up. They're asking for higher fees, but successful programs apparently have not had a problem. Well, they've had a problem, but they figured out how to recoup those fees. Courts have ruled that probation cannot be revoked when an indigent offender has not paid his fees. There's been a couple of court cases where if someone cannot pay the fees because they don't have a job or they're in full-time rehabilitation programs and such, or in our case might be living in the villages, native in the villages. You can't take revoke their probation for that. But successful programs in other areas, they replace that with community service. So for non-payment or for to enforce that type of thing. Offenders who were willfully behind in fee payments also had violated other conditions of their probation. Ones that willfully did not pay, it was not uncommon that they were also in violation of other areas of the probation, so it was more of a they weren't fulfilling other parts of their probation anyway, too. So they were unwilling to pay. Therefore, it's argued that probation fee programs are not likely to increase probation failure rates, and that's an important thing I know with corrections, because their probation is not going to be revoked solely on the reason that they don't pay their fees. Also, the time it takes for corrections officers or probation officers to administer or collect the fees. There was a National Council on Crime and Delinquency study, and they found that collections rarely occupied more than 2% of a probation officer's time. Not only that, but they found that when they were first, many probation officers, when it was first introduced, the program of collecting fees didn't like it, and for obvious reasons. But from in areas where they have a good, such as Texas, and there's several other states that are having successful programs. From the beginning, the probation administrators administrators made it clear to employees that fee collection is part of the job. The line staff today generally accepts fee collection and responsibilities as part of the job, part of the course. And rather than detracting from casework, fee collection actually furthers the goal of helping probationers avoid relapsing into criminal behavior. Then they're seeing some good things come of it, too. The regularity of fee payment is a good barometer of probationers' overall adjustment while on probation. According to Monty Morgan, who's director of adult probation in Jefferson County in Texas. He says there is a direct correlation between probation compliance and fee payment. Opportunity to help teach offenders how to budget and meet ongoing financial obligations on time, and getting offenders to accept responsibility for making payments and to take charge of their lives. The state of Alaska a few years ago did have provide for collection of fees, and then it was rescinded. And part of the reason for that is because they were unsuccessful in getting enough money to offset the cost of the program itself, which can be a problem. But other states have been able to do it, and there are ways to do regulations and statutes that would allow for it to be a successful program. It does not totally cover the cost of supervision, but it would augment that budget item, and it could also provide for extra services that now we can't seem to afford for these people. And that's about all I have.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes, Senator Terrio. The record should reflect Senator Cowdery joined us, too.
The $3.30 amount, how was that arrived at? I'm sorry, I was looking at some of the wording.
Yeah, actually, in the bill itself, it says no less than $1.50 a day, which comes to about $45 a month, basically. And that would be for supervision. The $3.30 a day was a suggestion from Senator Ward. Actually, just about anything could be used.
So that wasn't
as far as money wise. Yeah, that was the one that was proposed in the bill a couple years ago. That particular number, and Senator wanted to use it again. But the bill itself, it actually says $1.50 a day, rather than the $3.30.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. The next witness we have signed up here in Juneau is Michael Stark.
I believe that there are some people on the line.
There are? Would you like to defer for them?
If I could, please.
Sure thing, Mike. No problem. And Bob Butkane, same thing? Okay. I'll then turn to Bruce Richards, who was the first one signed up online. Bruce?
Rate would actually be set in regulations by the department, and take this type of a contract, a collection agency who they're only interested really in collecting on delinquent debt. And what we found is, so far, is like a bank, a financial institution who would set up a type of an escrow account to administer the collection of these fees. Some of the other things that I'd like to discuss briefly are some of the points made by Senator Ward's staff. There are some successful programs that she mentioned in Texas. She quoted a few times, and I guess one important thing to point out in the Texas collection is that this fee is commonly made the first priority of collection prior to victim restitution and fines and those things. And so when you move that to the top of the list, your success rate would obviously go up as far as collections go, but then victims who are in line for restitution would actually come second to the fee. I guess there's a number of issues dealing with this, and we just don't see how it's going to pencil out monetarily for the state. Even though this is contracted out, we believe that in order just even using the escrow system as an example, there's a setup fee for accounts, there's an annual maintenance fee. We believe the state would have to be on the hook initially to set up these accounts. And it's about a $30-$35 fee, I believe, to set up each account, which would be done, you know, almost immediately when the offender was released from the institution and began probation and parole. They have very little money, if any, coming out at that point, and so I would assume the state would have to pick up that fee just to get the account set up and going. I guess I don't have a lot to add. There's lots of issues to discuss, you know, on this subject, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. But I guess our main point is just based on past experience, and like I said, it probably works in other areas of the country. It just does not seem to be a good fit for Alaska based on our past experience.
Yeah, Senator Cowdery has a question, John.
Okay.
Yeah, you said that 330 a day. How much is that a year? That would be about $2.
Over 1,000.
Yeah. And you think it's tough to collect. What about the permanent fund?
Through the chair, Senator Cowdery, these offenders, the first year that they get out of prison, they don't receive a permanent fund that's already taken by the state.
What about the second year?
The permanent fund is available. This fee would come in several places down the list after child support and victim restitution. I don't have the list in front of me, Senator Cowdery, but there's a list of things set in statute that have to come before this.
Well, it seems to me we're always looking for sources of revenue, and if we don't have revenue, we have to cut programs or to use the maximum revenue we have for the programs. What has a higher priority than education, public safety, and our road transport? Would you put this?
Where would I put this fee?
Yeah, where in priorities of where are we going to get the money to support all these programs and that? I guess I don't know if you understand what I'm saying. Should we get the money to keep on supporting the probation system? Should we cut that and rely for its own user fee there, so to speak?
Well, through the chair, Senator Cowdery, just going backwards to your referral to programs or treatment, that already is on the offender. Once they leave the institution, they're required to pay for their own treatment that's ordered by the court. And I don't know where you would put this in line, but I guess I would say that certainly child support and victim restitution and those types of things would certainly come above this.
Education?
Yes.
Public safety?
Yes.
Transportation corridors and maintenance?
Senator Cowdery, I don't know. I guess the biggest thing is that we were trying to make a point of is that, you know, if you're speaking specifically to collection of this fee that there are things that are more important to be funded, including child support, victim restitution, public safety, and those things. I suppose you could run through the whole list of state programs, but I don't know how to rank them.
Okay, for now.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Gene, did you have a question? Go right ahead.
Bruce, can you give me a little bit more information about the previous program? How long was that statute on the books?
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, that was from 1989 through 1991. I don't know the actual enacted days and the repeal days, but those were the years.
Okay, and so the eight, you said it was only 8% of the people actually paid up like they were supposed to?
Did was we went back and found the receipts for the program and divided that by the number of the caseload at that time, which worked out to be about 8%. We brought in the last year that we have records for approximately $120,000, and there were just under 3,000 probationers on the caseload.
Okay, thank you.
I had questions similar to those of Senator Terrio, and I appreciate his asking them. You basically had a program that ran effective for maybe 2 years during that period of time. I'd sure like to know what the mechanics were. How did the person on probation actually make his payment? Did he make it to a different agency or office? And you said you had to go out and collect the receipts. I mean, was this accounted for on the individual probationer's log sheet kept by the probation officer? Did he do the collecting? Who picked up the money? I can tell you for an absolute fact that while serving in the House at that period of time, my colleague from Ketchikan, John Sun, was trying to pay his student loan. He was having a heck of a time finding anybody in the state he could give his check to. And that's how screwed up our entire system was of collecting on student loans back then. He actually had to write letters and hunt around to find anybody willing to even take his check. And I imagine if the department didn't want this thing to happen to them in the first place, there probably was not a great deal of zeal on the part of probation officers to make certain that these amounts got collected. So I'm curious as to if you know any more of the background on it, if you can tell us, you know, who kept track of the money, how was it handled, and why was it a couple of years later when you discovered it was 8%?
Senator Taylor, have Linda Zog here, the Director of Community Corrections, who maybe can address that better.
Yeah, Linda, go right ahead.
Senator, I have a copy of the old policy that was in place when that fee was in place, and it basically says the probation officer, probation fee compliance is the responsibility of the supervising probation officer, whereas the responsibility for payment rests with the probationer. The probation officer shall arrange and monitor the probationer's payment, which will be made to the clerk designated for this purpose by the chief probation officer of the region. The collection payment procedures are as follows. They talk about cash or money order coming into the clerk.
When it says clerk, do you mean clerk of court?
No, the clerk of the probation officer.
Oh, okay, so the receptionist or clerk there at the probation office would be accountable for that.
Yeah, essentially accepted the money in and forwarded it to our accounting people in Juneau, which then forwarded it to the general state account.
Okay, but even worst case scenario, the department actually picked up another hundred and some thousand dollars general fund revenue basically that year, didn't they? To offset the cost of probation. Well, it all goes.
120.4.
Yeah, so 120 grand. I mean, that probably more than paid the cost of one probation officer for the year. It may not have supported the program, but it better to poke in the ear, I guess, huh?
Boxes and boxes of logs of community work service reports, and the probation officers had to tally those up
Yeah, well, that's good. Then somebody out in the community got some help out of the process, too. But when we got rid of it, we lost the income and we lost the community work service, didn't we? Well, I think you hit the nail right on the head. I don't think the department wanted to do it, and the probation officers didn't want to be in the business of collecting fees, and so it didn't happen. That probably did have a major impact on it. Let me suggest on prioritization that we in the legislature have certainly made policy calls on that over the years, trying to decide among which motherhood and apple pie things ought to get the money first as opposed to somebody else getting it second. I don't know that those are necessarily carved in stone, and I would imagine that we would probably all be willing to take another look at that. At least it would seem to me that if such a program were to be implemented as contemplated in this bill, before that guy can make any child support payments or make any restitution payments or make any payments for his treatment, he's got to be out of jail and on probation. And if we have to, as budgets and revenues around here decline, if we have to cut back on probation and more people have to stay in jail longer, then he doesn't. I mean, the first entry is he's got to get on probation and get back out on the street where he can make this money. It would seem to me that that would be your number one priority in making sure that department was taken care of. And if revenues were necessary to do that from the individual, for him to get back on the street, as opposed to sitting further in jail, I don't think there's a whole lot of them that would feel real bad about paying a couple, $3 to be out. And that's literally what the choice is that you're talking about. So I would think we could probably take another look at that, assuming that the bill gets further debate and moves a little. Linda, go ahead, John. Yeah. Yes, Senator Condry.
Yeah, it just seems to me we got incentive here. The incentive is to stay on parole. And if you don't give them, you know, if the way the bill is, I understand it, if you don't pay, you go back in the can. And I'm not sure that's that's cheaper, but it seems to me that if you were paroled, you would pretty easy to come up with this $100 a month or whatever it runs to come there. And I think if you take the incentive out, and I guess there's other options. I don't think this administration would be like the past administration in Washington and forgive a lot of these things, pardon or whatever, but I'd hope so anyway. But it seems to me that these are criminals. They've been proved guilty, and we're doing them a favor to start to give them the parole to start with. And if they can handle it, if they can't, they'll do it. That's just my comment.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Linda, you had only answered a question, and I know you had yourself down there for answers. Did you want to make any further statements? And then I was going to call on Barbara Brink.
No, Senator, I did not. Bruce was speaking on behalf of our department today.
Yeah, okay. Is Barb there?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Barb Brink with the Alaska Public Defender Agency. Mr. Chairman, I'm just here to answer questions regarding our fiscal note. A lot of times people forget how the Public Defender Agency might get involved in these situations. And because this fee is not simply collected by garnishing wages or attaching PSC checks, but also by filing petitions to revoke probation, filing petitions to revoke parole, the Public Defender Agency is seriously implicated. What we have to do in a situation like that is represent a person who is accused of not making a good faith effort to pay this fee. We would have to help them collect the data concerning their income, what they were doing with their time, how they were otherwise occupied, whether they were in treatment or whether they engaged in some seasonal occupation that precluded them from earning money during the months at hand, and gather that evidence together to pay, I'm sorry, gather that evidence together to persuade the court that the person was making good faith effort. The situation here is kind of interesting because it puts the burden on the defendant County is completely capable of paying that fee and requires the public defender agency in appointed cases to gather the evidence to prove that they are not able to. Our fiscal note is rather small. We anticipate a half-time attorney, probably not for a couple of years until the program gets up and running. But I guess I just wanted to highlight how dangerous it is to try to predict these things. I can't really tell you how many cases we're going to have where people are getting revoked based on this fee. I'm a little worried because the language is mandatory. Every person does have to be ordered to pay this, even if the judge can see in the courtroom that they really don't have either the mental facility or the wherewithal to come up with that kind of money. And, you know, Senator Cowdery asked, who couldn't come up with this kind of money, who couldn't come up with $100 a month? Frankly, for some of our indigent clients who are homeless, who owe restitution and fines and have a felony surcharge already on the books and their Rule 39 costs, which has been assessed against them, I think for some of our clients it is not going to be easy. And we will have some of these hearings. We estimated very low. We're figuring only a half-time position and then bumping that up after a few years to a three-quarter position. But I just wanted to mention that in FY98, we handled over 3,800 new felony cases and new juvenile delinquency cases. If only three-quarters of those folks had some kind of probation or parole, and I think that's kind of low. And if even 10% of those people are unable to pay, that would be a huge additional caseload for us, over 300 new cases per year based on this. So I'm making my best estimates. I just wanted to caution the committee that it could be more expensive than this from our point of view.
Yeah, Barb, thank you. Questions? Senator Cowdery?
Yeah, you say you handle 3,800 cases.
New
felony cases, is that right? Do you have any estimate of the cases that you handle, how much or how many of them are bonded until the case is in there? I mean, there's a cost to getting bonded, and if it seems to me if they're bondable, they should be able to bond or do some scheme of paying this $100 a month or something. Do you have any handle on the number of your 3,800 that have found the need under the arrest to bond themselves?
Through the chair, Senator Cowdery, no, I apologize. We don't have the ability to keep that kind of data, but I can tell you anecdotally that very few of our charged felony clients are released from custody pending their resolution of their case. The vast majority of our clients remain incarcerated until their trial.
Thank you.
Further questions? Mike, you haven't testified yet. You deferred to the folks on the teleconference.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Michael Stark. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, Service Counsel to the Department of Corrections. Hopefully I can clarify just a couple of the issues. The bill seems straightforward and simple, and I think what Bruce was trying to make clear is that it is a little more complicated than it seems. There are hidden costs here, and it's not likely to pay for itself. Some of the costs, I think, are enhanced risk to the public safety, particularly in the small probation offices, when you take time away from supervision where they have to deal with bookkeeping type of issues and following up on probation or parolees. Stories, if you will, about why they haven't paid or their difficulties in paying, corroborating those kinds of things, as opposed to supervising them on the more substantive types of conditions which relate to public safety, then you are detracting from public safety. There are a number of offices in rural areas of the state where there are one or perhaps two probation parole officers, and it was a considerable burden when this was in effect. In 89 through 91, in terms of dealing with those kinds of issues and supervising the offenders. I think also it's, and perhaps Linda Zog could comment, I believe that the type of offender we have out on the street today in probation and parole, mandatory parole certainly, are even more serious than they were back in the late 80s and early 90s. We have you know, well over 3,000 offenders, and maybe Linda could comment, I don't know the exact number, but that are, I think, close to 4,000 between probationers and parolees that are being supervised at any one time, a considerable number of which are out there for violent offenses, sex offenses, murder, armed robbery, that type of thing. Just as a matter of public policy, I would hope that you would seriously take a look at diminishing the supervision, because the one byproduct of this bill will be some diminishment, however slight, of supervision of these persons while we're dealing with, first of all, enforcing probation parole fee payments, and then down the line, and perhaps even more resource-intensive, pursuing revocations, putting together a case, showing that the offender had, arguably at least, had an ability to pay. Clearly, in those places, those offenders who live a subsistence lifestyle simply have no cash. I don't imagine the probation officers are going to file revocations with the parole board or the court, because it makes no sense. But for those where there's an arguable ability to pay, it requires time and resources to assemble the cases. Some of them would likely be successful, some of those revocations. And I would suggest to you, it costs over $100 a day to house an offender. They're getting credit at $50 a day for paying off their fee when they're incarcerated, at least for a probation revocation. Those numbers don't. We're losing money by doing that. Another concern is that it's mandatory for the parole board to revoke parole for any offender who doesn't pay, who has the ability to pay and does not pay parole fee. Yet you have no measure such as the $50 per day, which is applied to probationers. It says shall revoke their parole, presumably their entire parole. So they may owe $100, $300. They may have to go back in jail for a year or 2 years. There seems to be some inequity there, and certainly costly to the state. That's another concern. The particular concern I remember, besides the fact that it doesn't seem to work out financially, whether we make $100,000 or $150,000 a year, what the hidden costs are, but primarily to enhance risk to public safety. And I'm available to for any questions.
Have you any consideration of being to privatize the collection? You know, that's been talked about for a couple of years.
Well, there is a provision in here.
The courts have agreed that might be the way to do do you have any comment on that?
Through the chair, if I may, Senator Cowdery, I think the trend has been actually that the Attorney General's office pursues collections for money owing to different state agencies, and they have a collection session that's being beefed up, and I think they do a pretty good job. This particular bill has a section actually which does mandate that. Section 9 of the bill mandates the Department of Corrections contract out either with a collection agency or another person for the administration and collection. But 2 years ago, the identical bill was introduced, and the Department of Corrections made efforts to see if any collection agency was willing to take this on. And I think Bruce Richards alluded to the fact that none of them were willing. It just wasn't going to pan out financially for them. And that's when they looked at the only other resort being a bank to set up these escrow accounts. And then there would have to be follow-up to pursue collection if that didn't work. So it might actually be more than one agency they'd have to contract with, first a bank to set up the accounts, and then secondly a collection agency if there were delinquent accounts that were significant enough that would pay off.
But I know you said that the administration, but the court, we got a separation of power here. It's my understanding the court is now using privatizing the collection of their fines. And it would seem to me that I don't know if they have a bunch of banks that do that. They collect the money and give it to the recipients. That's the way I understand it. That's a simple approach, but I'm fairly confident that that's what they're making an effort to do now, the court.
If I may respond, Senator Taylor. Senator Cowdery, I actually, there is an employee of the court system here, and I just checked with him, and he indicates that's not what's going on. And I think it's the Attorney General's office, the collections section, that's pursuing fines, restitution on behalf of the state. It hasn't been privatized. It's a great idea if it would only pay off. The problem, of course, is the target population here are not well off. I mean, there obviously are exceptions. A good many of them simply don't have the resources. Those probably wouldn't be pursued if money simply isn't there. And then there's another whole group that it's arguable they can pay. Those are the group that would be the target group, and then the percentage that actually do pay. And certainly, you know, we would hope that if the bill is enacted, that it would be a larger percentage that could pay. It's a worthy idea. Obviously, these people have transgressed our laws, and they owe a debt to society. Part of that, a significant part, is paying it through incarceration, and then through probation or parole supervision. And if they could pay financially as well, I think that would be great. You know, the Department of Corrections has to rely on experience, and perhaps Senator Taylor is correct that the probation officers weren't very happy with that requirement. I mean, that's understandable. You know, their job description really is supervising these folks as opposed to being bookkeepers or accountants, and my guess is most of them weren't very enthusiastic. Even if we allow for that and you know, build in a higher percentage, even if we double it, 8% to 16%, 20%, we're still looking at a very small amount, and I'm concerned personally, having worked with probation officers for many years and seen the types of lawsuits that the state has had to face when victims are harmed by these folks, when if perhaps we'd been supervising them a little more closely, we could have prevented that harm. There is a fiscal impact, but then there's also just the harm to families and citizens, the physical injury, the emotional harm to families that when these folks recidivate. And I would hope that we could do whatever possible to if anything, beef up supervision and certainly not detract from it.
Thank you, Mike. Anything more? Yeah. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Terrio.
Do we have fiscal notes?
I haven't seen a fiscal note from the public defender yet. If one was sent in, we don't have it. That's why I was looking around when she mentioned it.
Do you have the one from the Department of Corrections? Oh, is that one there, too?
Nope. Check. Don't have either one. Check this morning.
Bruce, you're still on the line?
Yes, I am.
I understood that you sent in a fiscal note?
I believe it was sent over on Friday afternoon, but I'm not positive last week.
Okay, because I think the department also has projected what its fiscal impact will be.
Hmm. Well, I'd sure like to see those.
Senator Taylor, I'll make sure the committee gets those.
No, we haven't received them either from you or from Public Defender yet. Now, my staff person in charge of this, or that works on this committee, is at the intensive care unit at Bartlett right now with some heart problems. So things may have got more than a little fouled up around my office this morning, too. So if they were late in being transmitted or just came in today, it may very well be that we've missed them. But we'll certainly make every effort to get those to members, and we won't pass the bill out until we've seen them. So that you're aware of that. Yes, Senator Terrio.
Do you have any other people that wish to testify?
No. Robert Butkin, who's right here. He was the only other person.
Okay, and then I wonder if we could have the...
...was hoping for. But otherwise, we're just running at loggerheads at this point. And I would hope there'd be something better that could come out of it, something more affirmative than just that. Because I think a law imposed of this type right now, with the attitude out there from the people who would be required to enforce it, is such that we're just asking for another failed system that isn't really going to work. So those are just my thoughts, and maybe that helps as far as future testimony and stuff is concerned. But thank you, Bob, very much. We'll give Jerry's representative a chance to wrap up.
Thank
Loretta Brown again.
Senator Terrio wanted to give you the opportunity to respond to the comments that had been made.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, definitely I'm glad that senators wanted to get a look at the fiscal notes, and in my previous position as, you know, co-chair of finance and trying to squeeze all the fiscal notes into a dollar amount that the caucus was willing to accept. You know, I would work with the prime sponsor to say, well, what about these concerns? What degree of validity do you give them? What have you found out as far as other states? You know, the way they operate their systems or have modified their systems to deal with the expense. And if Senator Ward's been involved in this legislation previously, What kind of responses did he have to the claims that it's going to cost more than it brings in and all the things that you just heard?
Through the chair, Senator Terrio. Just in the last few weeks, I've been doing a lot of research, and it seems like the successful programs, there's an average of $10 to $40 a month, and they're finding that generally probationers do not have a problem doing that. And when they do have a problem, it's usually it's in some other area. I mean, this is just a reflection of something else that's going on. They're unable to hold a job if they're unable to support themselves. It's not always because there's something good going on. Sometimes it's bad going on. And they're finding that most of the cases that actually go to pull their probation or send them back to jail, it isn't just the non-payment that's the problem. There's something else going on, too. They are not abiding by other areas of their probation. Now, I can find some more information out for you, specific questions and stuff, but generally they're finding that it does not increase caseload as far as going back to jail. And it's cheaper to have someone on probation than it is to have them incarcerated. So it seems to me it makes sense to do something like this.
So you would say that these people are probably in trouble with their parole, other violations of the parole.
There's other violations going on anyway. Most of the other places that I've seen, that I've read, they don't revoke probation solely on the non-payment. Okay, there's other things not going on. There's other non-compliance issues. And if that's the case, then perhaps they shouldn't be on parole. There's something else. You know, there's other issues that need to be dealt with, too, and this is just one of them.
And did Senator Ward consider the specific cases where we hear that there's perhaps a sex offense within the family, and now you potentially have the payment for housing this juvenile outside the home, plus the parents are going to be paying a fee?
He has not communicated that to me. Never even crossed my mind, to be honest.
I think most of us didn't realize that. I knew it was going on, but I when a sex offender within the family is placed, say, here at the Johnson Center or something else, that family is called upon to pay for the cost of treatment for the child, counseling, a portion of the cost of care for the just housing and so on. And they are paying for that already, and that's a significant amount of money. Paying another $40 a month for, I don't think would be, maybe it rubs additional salt into the wound. It's already a horrible wound. If the kid's here because he's been doing something to his sister and or whatever other sisters in the family, and you've got the whole family basically with its being ripped apart by this awful thing, yeah, it's a tragic situation. But is it one in which, if the family is if it's two folks raising a family here in Juneau that it occurs to, and both of them have good jobs with the state, I mean, and they're going to pay for this thing anyhow, is $40 more a month really something that's going to make or break that program or make or break that family? And thank God we don't have prisons that we throw people into just because of debt. We don't have debtors' prisons anymore, and that's why under even this bill you can't throw somebody back into jail if the only thing they did was not pay for the money. You have to be able to show that they had money and they could have paid for it and didn't do so. So, I mean, there's quite a standard you'd have to go through, and that's why I'm assuming in most states that have this kind of a system, they basically are looking to other reasons to revoke probation other than just the sole reason of failure to pay the probationary fee. I mean, that would be very unusual to have such a case. They can occur, and I've seen them done, but but they're very rare because you have to be able to show that they had some income to begin with and that that income was kind of excess to what their needs were, and then they failed to apply it. So that's that willful non-payment question that's listed here. I'm going to hold the bill until next Wednesday, at which time we'll have another committee hearing, and the main purpose for holding it is so that the members can all have an opportunity to review the fiscal notes, raise any additional questions. At that time, it would be my intent not to take further testimony, but if the committee wishes to discuss, it would be my intent at that time to entertain a motion to move the bill.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes, Senator Cowdery.
Thank you. I've sat here and listened as to what it's going to cost to collect, but what is the cost if we do nothing? I mean, that's the big issue. How do you compare the two? It seems to me that society has got a cost involved either way here, but I think the cost of doing nothing is far greater. I'm not saying this is a perfect bill, but I'm saying this is a start.
Okay. And if anybody has any amendments or suggestions, if they'll submit them to me in the interim, I intend to look further at this bill between now and the next hearing myself. Thank you, everyone, for attending. We are adjourned.
I told you. I love